given a little bit of thought to what this night represents. I know most of you have had in mind the word tabernacles, and I don't know if you thought about the implications of that or any of the implications of this particular festival. Has anybody given some consideration to this night and what it might mean as far as things that's happened in the past or in the present or in the future? It's all indications there. Raise your hand if you've given some thought to this. Okay, that's good. That's what we like to see. Tonight, I'd like to go to my message to you. My scripture reading tonight is in Leviticus 23 and starting with the 33rd verse. So let's look at this together. We're going to read 33 through 44. Again, the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the sons of Israel, saying, on the 15th of this seventh month is the Feast of Booths for 7 days to the Lord. On the first day is the holy convocation. You shall do no laborious work of any kind. For 7 days you shall present an offering by fire to the Lord. On the eighth day you shall have a holy convocation and present an offering by fire to the Lord. It is an assembly. You shall do no laborious work. These are the appointed times of the Lord which you shall proclaim as holy convocations. To present offerings by fire to the Lord, burnt offerings and grain offerings, sacrifices and drink offerings, each day's matter on its own day. Besides those of the Sabbaths of the Lord, and besides your gifts, and besides all your votive and freewill offerings which you give to the Lord, on exactly the 15th day of the seventh month, when you have gathered in the crops of the land, you shall celebrate the feast of the Lord for 7 days, with a rest on the first day and a rest on the eighth day. Now on the first day you shall take for yourselves the foliage of beautiful trees, palm branches and boughs of leafy trees and willows of the brook, and you shall rejoice before the Lord your God 7 days. You shall thus celebrate it a feast to the Lord for 7 days in the year. It shall be a perpetual statute throughout your generations. You shall celebrate it in the seventh month. You shall live in booths for 7 days. All the native born in Israel shall live in booths, so that your generation may know that I had the sons of Israel live in booths when I brought them out from the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God." So Moses declared to the sons of Israel the appointed times of the Lord. Now, I know you probably got several things out of that scripture reading. This is one of the appointed days and appointed time periods during God's year. And it is called by many names. It's called the Festival of Tabernacles. It's called the time of living in booths, Sukkot, and it's called ingathering. And let's look at Exodus 23 and 16 in the NASB version, translation of the Bible. NASB, Exodus 23 and 16. "Also you shall observe the feast of the harvest, of the first fruits of your labor from what you sow in the field. Also the feast of ingathering at the end of the year when you gather in the fruit of your labors from the field." Now as we look about us this year and at this particular season of the year, we see a lot of harvesting out in the fields in our area. And this is the end gathering of the harvest, and therefore one of the names of this festival. Today is the first day of God's appointed festival of tabernacles. It is celebrated for 7 days. The first day and the eighth day are holy days, as instructed by God, and they are both assembly days and Sabbaths to the Lord. Sukkot is the Hebrew word for tabernacles. And Sukkot involves both a celebration for the fall harvest, which we're going through right now, and remembering the dwelling in booths during the trip from Egypt back to the Promised Land that the Hebrew people had at that time of their slavery for 430 years at the hands of the Egyptians. God delivered them as they cried out to Him in their distress. And we want to know from all of this that God is just as real for us today. As we call out to Him for our needs and perhaps afflictions, perhaps distresses, we need to know that God is there for us just exactly like He was for them long, long ago. And as they made that journey from Egypt back to the Promised Land, the Word lets us know that God habitated or dwelt with them during this period of 40 years that they wandered from Egypt to the Promised Land. Sukkot is a type of Jewish thanksgiving to God for His ever watchful eye of concern over His people. We are His people today, and He has that concern and that watchful eye on our lives also. It's widely believed that the first Puritan colonists in America were also great students of the Hebrew Scriptures, and that they based the first American Thanksgiving on Sukkot. Sukkot is also known as the time of our rejoicing. Let's look at Deuteronomy 16 and starting at the 13th verse. Deuteronomy 16 and 13. You shall celebrate the Feast of Booths 7 days after you have gathered in from your threshing floor and your wine vat, and you shall rejoice in your feast, you and your sons and your daughter and your male and female servants and the Levite and the stranger and the orphan and the widow who are in your town. 7 days you shall celebrate a feast to the Lord your God in the place which the Lord chooses, because the Lord your God will bless you in all your produce and in all the work of your hands, so that you will be altogether joyful. Do you see how it is called the time of our rejoicing? Celebrations to God for His deliverance, for His provisions, and His ever watchful eye over the lives of His people. The traditional Jewish observance of Sukkot centers around the construction and use of a temporary hut in which to live for that 7-day period instead of one's home. This holy day is so joyful that some start the construction of this hut 5 days early, immediately after the fast day of Yom Kippur. Special meals are enjoyed each day with special blessings for palm branches, and particular fruit are said to God. The lulav, which is a palm branch, and the etrog, which is a citron, like perhaps a lemon, are said. God's appointed times are are given, and they are, and this particular ceremony of the lulav and the etrog are done by the priest. And the way they do this is they wrap these palm branch and these different elements of the four species. They wrap them in a bundle together, and then the priest or the person in charge then takes this wrap, and then he faces the north, and he waves this wrap, and the other three elements. He waves it to the north, and then he turns and waves it to the south. Then he waves it to the east, and then he waves it to the west. And these are called the four species. Also, we have future significance. We have prophecies that have to do with the Festival of Tabernacles. And one is in John 1, and the chapter 1, if you recall, the scriptures read, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God." And it reads on that the Word became flesh and dwelt. And that dwelt word in John is translated from the Greek skeno, meaning to tent or to encamp, as God was in the tabernacle in the wilderness. Dwelt or skeno means to tabernacle. Yeshua became flesh and tabernacled among us, as was prophesied in the Torah and the prophets. There is much more evidence to believe in his birth, in Yeshua's birth at this time of the year of tabernacles, rather than late December. Traditionally, this is the season of joy. This particular time right now, we've read a little bit of that. Angels announced his birth. Let's look at Luke 10, 2 and 10. Luke 2 and 10. "But the angel said to them, 'Do not be afraid, for behold, I bring you good news of great joy, which will be for all the people.'" Jewish tradition has prayer on the first day of tabernacles equal to that of Luke 2 and 14. Let's see what that says. "Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace among men with whom he is pleased." And that's something that this particular verse was read at this time of the year, in the time of tabernacles. And we can see how these things point toward the birth of Yeshua. Right now, he brought great joy because he fulfilled the prophecies of old of his coming and the purpose of his coming. Luke 2 and 7, let's see what it says. Luke 2 and 7, "And she gave birth to her firstborn son, and she wrapped him in clothes and laid him in a manger because there was no room for him at the end. And when we examine that, the implications are, well, there was no room for them at the end, because at this time of the year there was such an influx of people into Jerusalem to celebrate this occasion right now, to celebrate the Festival of Tabernacles. And so the rooms were all taken, and that's why when they brought little Jesus, when he came into the world, that there wasn't room. Only at the Feast of Tabernacles also was sheep left outside for 7 days and sacrificed on the 8th day, commanded to be outside day and night. In December, or the winter, or let's say December the 25th, traditionally celebrated as Yeshua's birth, sheep would be in some type of protective area. They would be in caves or some sort of shelter during that time, because it would be rainy, cold. They would not be out in the open. So we see that's another positive for the reinforcing that Jesus' birth was not in latter part of December, but was late September, October area. Also, the Romans was more likely to take the census that they were doing, which caused Mary and Joseph to be where they were at that time. Romans was taking the census, and they were expecting to have taxes done on the people there. And so it was much more likely that this would be done in the September-October neighborhood, because it would be at festival time, it would be at harvest time, a lot of money would be floating around, people would be enjoying the fruit of their labor. And so it's much more likely that the Roman people would be doing their census and their placing the taxes on the people at that time rather than December. John the Baptist was born at Passover, and Jesus was recorded to be born 6 months after that. Zechariah, his father, was on duty in the temple along about June the 1st to 8th, and the angel Gabriel told Zechariah his wife would have a son, and Elizabeth became pregnant after his duty ended. And then 6 months later in December, visited Mary. Gabriel told Mary she would have the Messiah in December, 9 months later, and that was at Tabernacles. The Word was made flesh and tabernacled, or dwelt among us. Micah 5 and 2, Bethlehem is the birthplace, and there, due to the Roman census of the people and his lineage connection to David, that is, to go to the proper place to register for the census, the signs at that particular time also was in the heavens. A very rare aligning of the planets occurred in 2 BC to 7 BC, and there was very unusual at those particular times of brilliance in the skies. And in Matthew 2:1-2, let's see what that says. Matthew 2:1-2. Now, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, Magi from the east arrived in Jerusalem, saying, "Where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we saw his star in the east and have come to worship him." That's part of what we're speaking of there. Let's look at Luke 2:32 and see what it brings to us. Luke 2:32. A light of revelation to the Gentiles and the glory of your people Israel. So you see what we're speaking of there. A little bit more on the four species that I was talking about that the priests took and wrapped together as a unit that he could hold and wave. It was thought by the Hebrew people that these four elements represented different kinds of persons or classes of Jews. The etrog, or the citron that I was speaking of, tastes sweet, has a delightful aroma, and it represents the kind of person with knowledge of the Torah and good deeds. And it was usually held in the left hand as the blessings was done. So the what amounted to a lemon or a fruit, a citron fruit, would be held in the left hand. And then the lulav palm branch from the date palm, the fruit tasted sweet, had no aroma, representative of a person that has knowledge but no good deeds. And it was held in the right hand, as the blessings were said, and the waving was done. The hadras was the myrtle, had no taste, but had nice fragrance. And it is said that it was representative of the type of person that had no true knowledge, but they had good deeds. And then lastly was the arava, which was the willow. Had no taste, no smell, representative of a person that had no knowledge and no good deeds. The blessings of the four species were said every evening of tabernacles. Each of the seven meals that were had on each day of tabernacles, blessings were said over these four species. And it is also said that tradition symbolizes for these the four patriarchs: Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph. And tradition also says that they were representative of the four letters representing God's name, YHWH. So that's interesting. Revelation 21:1-3, let's see what it says in things that is in the future concerning tabernacles. Revelation 21:1-3. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth passed away, and there is no longer any sea. And I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, made ready as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, "Behold, the tabernacle of God is among men, and he will dwell among them, and they shall be his people, and God himself will be among them." Let's look at Zechariah 14 and verse 16 and 17. Zechariah 14. And we want to look at some of these futuristic symbols of tabernacles and what they represent and what might happen in the future. Then it will come about that any who are left of all of the nations that went up against Jerusalem will go up from year to year to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, and to celebrate the Feast of Booths. And it will be that whichever of the families of the earth does not go up to Jerusalem to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, there will be no rain on them. So you see, whether people nowadays believe in the Festival of Tabernacles and want to participate in it, in its celebration, or not, one day they will be commanded to do so. And they could be in a situation that if they choose not to, then God will send punishment on them, direct punishment. They will not be harvesting good crops. There will be no rain for them. Sukkot was always known as the holy day that remembers God dwelling with his people. And he was with them that whole 40 years that they went from Egypt back to the promised land. He dwelt with them and tabernacled with them. At this time, prayers were said to God in faith for the upcoming winter rains essential for replenishing the land. It is the season of our joy, the time of our celebration, the time of our rejoicing. In closing, let's look at Deuteronomy 16 and verse 13. You shall celebrate the Feast of Booths 7 days after you have gathered in from your threshing floor and your wine vat. And you shall rejoice in your feast, you and your sons and daughters, and your male and female servants. In other words, everyone that is God's people and is in his family, and the Levite and the stranger and the orphan and the widow who are in your towns. 7 days you shall celebrate a feast to the Lord your God in the place in which the Lord chooses, because the Lord your God will bless you in all your produce and in all the work of your hands, so that you will be altogether joyful. And I hope that everybody has enjoyed this service tonight. And I would ask that if you would stand with me, and as we close our service tonight, let's repeat the Lord's blessing. So let's do this together. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine on you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance on you and give you peace.